Welcome to Session 3 in Mastering the Art of Follow-Through. Again, as for each session, you'll need your workbook, and this session will be no exception. Remember again, when you hear this beep, it means that we're going from the call back here into the studio. So let's listen in to our third week.
I wish to welcome everyone to Session 3 in our 12-week program. And let's get started. Gary Cox has been recognized as America's leading expert on personal growth and life strategies. And in today's session, Gary will be sharing with us ways to keep our passions fueled so that we can keep following through on our goals. And he'll be offering ideas on how to develop step-by-step plans that will make our goals a reality. He's going to explain some of the mental blocks that immediately stop people from mastering the art of follow-through and what prevents us from being able to look ahead and see the big picture. So it's time to listen closely, you guys. Get your pens and paper. Again, I'd like to welcome personal growth expert and life strategist, Gary Cox.
I want to thank everybody for, again, your time, the investment of your time, the investment of making the phone call. As you know, we've got people from France, New Zealand, Australia, Hawaii, and it really does mean a lot to me that so many of you are so involved with this and willing to wake up early in the morning, go to bed late at night to be involved. And again, I don't take that lightly. I take that very seriously, and I've spent many, many hours putting just tonight's session together. So let's go ahead and get started. We'll do a quick review or a recap of some of the information that we happened to go over on last week's session. What we talked about was how passion was important to setting our goals and how we can create some of this passion and why it is so important. So what we're going to be doing this evening is we're going to take that a little step further, and then we're going to go more into the goal setting process. One of the things that we also have to keep in mind is that passion can really get us to move toward our goals. It really helps us take action. Now, notice that I said that passion helps us take action. It doesn't necessarily cause us to take action. See, there's a lot of passionate people out there that have a lot of passion about ideas that they want to fulfill and dreams they want to fulfill, but unfortunately, they don't do anything with that passion. So, as we've already discussed, especially in Lesson 1 or in Session 1, that it takes more than goal setting to get the job done. We have to learn to really follow through and master the art of follow through. And to do that successfully, passion is important, and of course, mastering the evaluation that we started on day one in this. Let's go to Session 3. Hopefully, you have your papers that you have been able to print out, and we're going to start off with that. The first sentence is, you must keep your blank blank. You must keep your passions fueled. You must keep your passions fueled. That's F-U-E-L-E-D, fueled, like gasoline. So what do we mean by that? Well, if you have a passion, what you have to do is you've got to add fire to that passion. For example, if I said to you, how do you keep a fire going? You would usually say, well, I would add more fuel to it, or I'd add more wood or some logs to it. And that's what we have to do with our passions. Why? Because our passions that oftentimes can get very exciting, we can feel really good and excited about it, but because of a lot of no's, a lot of rejection, or because things don't go our way, unfortunately what can happen is we can lose some of that passion. That passion can start to die down. So the key then is to not only learn what our passions are, but we have to fuel them. It's really impossible for us to fuel our passions if we have no idea what they are. So let's take some time and learn a little bit more about fueling our passions. Now, we talked about it a little bit last week, but I want to go into it a little bit more because I want to go into it deeper and see how it relates to setting our goals specifically. So keep in mind that we have to now identify the two things, the passion and the fuel. So let's go to the next step on our page. Personally identify specific ways to keep my passions fueled. So what I'd like you to do when we have more time is I'd like you to go through that list of the passion, your passions, write them down, and then to the right of that, we need to come up with ways that we can fuel our passions. Now, I'll give you some examples on how you can do this, and believe me, you can get incredibly creative in doing this, and you want to learn to be really creative when it comes to fueling your passions. I'll give you an example on this. we had a letter from somebody. As you know, we're submitting interest in letters and questions, and we got an interesting letter from a lady by the name of Jane. And Jane said one of her passions was her family. She wanted to figure out how can, in her particular case, she of course has her own business, she wanted to figure out how can she use her passion for her family to really move her to follow through and to take action toward her goals. So I asked her a question. I said, what about your family are you passionate about? And she paused and hesitated for a little bit, and before she could answer that, I interrupted her thought process and I asked her another question. I asked her this question. I said to her, if you could do something right now, what would you do for your family? What would you like to do? And right away she said, I'd love to take my daughter to Disneyland. According to her, because of talking to her, learning a little bit about her background, her finances, etc., she wants to go all out on this. She doesn't want to do just a little $100 trip. She wants to do it right. To do this and accomplish this, it's going to take her a little while to accumulate that money. What can she do now to fuel some of that passion? I had a little neat idea for her. I said, you know what you need to do? You need to go ahead and buy you and your daughter a pair of Mouseketeer hats. That's what you need to do. And she laughed about it and chuckled. So what she needs to do is get her daughter on the computer with her, go on the internet, whatever, figure out where you can buy two little Mouseketeer hats, and go ahead and order them. Let her daughter sit there and punch in the credit card, punch in the address, and then her daughter's going to be excited for the next 3, 4, 5 days, whatever and however long it takes to get those Mouseketeer ears in. And then when they get them in, mom and daughter can wear them. But you see, here's the key. What's that going to cost her? $10, $20, maybe $30 max, I don't know. But it's certainly not going to cost her the large amount of money to actually going there, the money that she's going to have to spend. But it's a little simple, fun, exciting way. Now, over the next several months, she's going to see her daughter wearing these little Mouseketeer hats. And she's going to have it in front of her, on her bed, on a dresser drawer, somewhere visible, so it's constantly going to remind her. And her daughter's going to come at her every so often, Mommy, when are we going to go? When are we going to get to go? So she can use something simple like this to fuel the fire. Now, for her to make this happen, even though we haven't even talked about how she's going to make the money, she knows for her to make this happen, she's got to get up and follow through. She's got to work her business. She's got to work toward her goals. She's got to take action. And every time she sees this little hat and her daughter talks about it and she sees the excitement in her daughter's eye, she wants to use that fuel and go forward. That's the key, friends. Know what the fuel is. You've got to know the fuel. I know all the fuels of my passions. Remember, you can't fuel your passions if you don't know what they are. Are there several ways to do this? Absolutely. You could take one particular passion. You might have 5, 10, 15 different ways to fuel the passion. Know what they are and constantly look for ways to fuel the passion. That's very, very important. Something else that's interesting, though. Keep in mind, as I said earlier, there's a lot of people who have a lot of passion, but they don't take any action. They don't follow through. Unfortunately, that's sad, and it's a waste. Let me give you an illustration. When I learned to fly Learjets, one of the things they teach you is how to manage your fuel. And one thing I did not know, which I thought was quite interesting, did you know that in some Learjets, it will burn as much fuel sitting on the ground with the engine started in park, or taxiing at 10 miles an hour waiting to take off, it'll burn as much fuel on the ground as it will at altitude flying 550 miles an hour. So what about you? Are you passionate about something? Did you fuel the passion? Now once you fuel the passion, what are you doing? Are you sitting on the ground just burning the fuel? That's priceless fuel. That's expensive excitement. You need to do something with it. So what do you need to do? You need to get to the end of the runway as quick as you possibly can, and you need to take the fuel that you've put in your jet, in your passion, if you will, and you need to get out of there. You need to get to altitude and use it to take you as far as you possibly can. That's the importance of understanding how to use your passions. Let's go to the next sentence under the columns that you see there where it says the passion and the fuel. Important sentence here. It says, learn to blank the blank you generate to follow blank and blank blank. Let's fill in the blanks here. Learn to associate the excitement that you generate to follow through and take action. That's a very powerful sentence. Let me repeat that. Learn to associate the excitement you generate, what excitement that you generate, the excitement that you're generating from the fueling of this passion. Learn to generate this in such a way that you follow through and take action. So when you get excited and you're learning to feed your passions and fuel them and get them going, when you feel some of that excitement, you must instantly, for lack of a better word, program yourself. You must instantly take yourself from feeling this excitement that you fueled yourself with and do something, even though it's difficult to move and do it, if in fact it is for you. Do something. This is how you condition your brain. This is how you master your mind. This is how you master the art of follow-through. So what you want to do is learn to fuel the passion. When you get some of that excitement, you want to take that excitement and channel it right away to moving and taking action toward your goals. Talk to somebody, make a phone call, whatever it is that you have to do specifically toward attaining your goals. And we're going to talk about later on how to set those goals and how to make sure we come up with a step-by-step plan. And we'll be talking about some of that, in fact, on today's call. Something else we want to keep in mind. If then we want to program ourselves, if you will, or condition our minds to immediately, once we feel some of that excitement that we've created by fueling some of the passion, if we want to go ahead and program ourselves to get to the point once we feel that excitement to go ahead and follow through and take some type of action step, what about when we're discouraged? Interesting to think about. Let's say we're discouraged. You obviously don't have the fuel now. We're running out. What do we do? Well, just as much as you've programmed or are learning to or need to program yourself to take that excitement and move it to something where you're following through toward your goal, you need to do the same thing when you're discouraged. And let me tell you, that is a lot easier said than done. So what's my point? My point is, when it all hits the fan and everything looks like it's just not going to happen, nothing's going to work, you get all this rejection, all the no's, whatever it is that makes you feel that this is it, it's done, it's over with, at that point, you need to move again. You need to condition and program yourself to do what? To follow through and take action. If you don't follow through and take action, the problem that you're going to have if you're not doing this is you're going to quit and you're going to give up. So not only do you need to program, if you will, or condition your mind to take action when you're excited, you also need to condition yourself to take action when you're not. It's easy for some people to take action when they're excited. Now, on the other hand, some people get so excited, they get off a course. And unfortunately, because they get off a course, they take action somewhere else that has nothing to do with their goals. So we need to be focused at the same time when we do this. So we get the excitement and we move. We associate the goals. So what I would do, as a lot of you know, I'm passionate about airplanes, so I would go to the airport, I would hear the airplanes, I would smell that jet fuel, and I want to make an emphasis here. When I tell people I smell jet fuel, I'm not talking about putting jet fuel in a can and sniffing it. I'm talking about smelling the exhaust. But when I would get that excitement, even though I know at that particular time it wasn't in my reach, I would take that excitement and I would drive to the office and I would get on the phones. I would do something all the time. Now, there were times that I would go to that airport and I would smell some of that fuel, and I would hear the helicopters, and at times I would get discouraged because I just didn't think it was even possible now because of the discouragement was so deep and so painful. And I would go there, and I just couldn't see that dream in front of me, and I would feel sometimes that discouragement, and I would learn to force myself to go there, because if I would go to that airport and I could not feel that excitement, because there's times I didn't, what it was for me, it didn't mean to quit. It didn't mean that it's not going to happen. It was basically a measuring rod for me to let me know at this particular time, it's gotten so bad that I don't believe anymore, or I don't believe as much as I did. So it doesn't mean I've got to throw in the towel. What it does mean is say, hey, wait a minute here. We've got a signal. Whoa, back off. Let's look at the signal. What's the signal telling us? You are so discouraged that when you're out here looking at these airplanes, you can't picture yourself owning one anymore. Something's wrong. So my belief got dampened. My passion got completely just burned out. So I have to go back again and start to try to rebuild that passion. Sometimes I would just have to leave. I never wanted to admit that, never wanted to succumb to that, but sometimes I would have to do that. Then I would go ahead and try to revamp, get going again the next day or the next hour, and keep going forward. I want you to think about that. Remember, it's a conditioning process.
And a process it is. Let's devote some more time on this subject. I think you'll agree that it's really easy to see your future goals becoming a reality when things are going well. But what about when things don't go our way? It can really become very difficult to look ahead and to be able to follow through. As I just mentioned, I used to go to the airports to create some excitement within myself because aviation is one of my passions. But there were times that I could not get myself to go to the airport, and if I did, I couldn't get myself to stay because I could not see the contrast of the negativity that I was experiencing at the present time and going all the way from that to getting my pilot's license or owning an airplane. I would be so discouraged. I knew I couldn't even go to the airport with the hope of trying to even think maybe the possibility of getting that airplane or that license. So I was emotionally very low. So then, in reality, I let mental vertigo get the best of me. And we'll be discussing mental vertigo in greater detail in Lesson 5. In other words, I mentally crashed. Knowing that this was really a mind game, I made it a must to master this. I wanted to become better at managing this mental vertigo. So here's what I would do. Here's how I'd go about doing this. The next time I felt discouraged, I would make plans to go to the airport. But before that would happen, before I would get discouraged, I would mentally walk myself through a scenario as if it were really happening. In other words, I would imagine feeling a little vertigo, then tell myself that I would go to the airport and keep my goals intact, mentally. I think you'll agree when your mind is clear and you're not feeling vertigo, it's easy to plan something like this, or at least easier. I would measure my mental vertigo in stages, similar to how maybe a patient in a hospital might be categorized as to being critical or stable. So when I would feel a little vertigo coming on, I would go to the airport and see under this present amount of vertigo, was I able to still have a never give up attitude and still be able to see that big picture. If I could do it, this would tell me that I was strong enough to control this amount of mental vertigo and still see the light at the end of the tunnel. This would also let me know the next time I get the same amount of vertigo that I'm strong enough mentally to keep going forward under this present amount of pressure. I would obviously know this because of the track record. I had a little bit of vertigo, went to the airport, handled it, no problem. I could do that much again. I would now take this to the next level. The next time I would experience even more vertigo than the previous experience, I would go back to the airport and go over the same process again. I got to the point that it didn't matter how bad it was. Most of the time, I was able to see the light at the end of the tunnel. Notice I said most of the time. Well, I'm human like you are too. Don't forget why mastering something like this is so very crucial to your success. Mental vertigo robs us of our beliefs. If you can't believe, you can't achieve. I'm sure you've heard that before. Now let's go back into our workbook. We're still at Session 3, page 1. You'll see the sentence that begins with, if you're. If you're able to see, put the word see, S-E-E, if you're able to see the light at the end of the tunnel while experiencing vertigo, V-E-R-T-I-G-O, if you're able to see the light at the end of the tunnel while experiencing vertigo, this means you still believe. That's the key. If you're able to see the light at the end of the tunnel while experiencing vertigo, this means you still believe. This is so important because we're nothing without that belief. So now it's your turn. It's your turn to apply these principles. Think about when you're in mental vertigo and unable to see the light at the end of the tunnel. If you could see the light at the end of the tunnel, what specifically would that light represent? Now take whatever your light is, your specific dreams or goals, and do what I did to mentally toughen yourself, as I just shared with you with regards to the previous exercise. Call it boot camp for the mind. Here's another example of how this might work. Let's say one of your goals is to purchase a new dream home for you and your family. And again, you'll note when I'm offering ideas or suggestions or strategies or examples, I often use tangible things like a house or a car and the like. By no means do I want to come across by giving the impression it's all about material things. I use material things because it's something that is tangible, something that you can see, feel, and touch. It makes it easier to illustrate. It makes it easier for your mind's eye to work and operate. So my job is to try to assist you in understanding these principles so that you can do all this on your own, by yourself. So using tangible things makes it easier for most of us to relate. Now let's go again back to page 1, session 3. You see a section at the bottom of the page that's divided into two parts, and it reads, My Goals, then to the right of that, Ways to Fuel My Passion That Could Put Me in Vertigo. For this exercise, under Goals, let's put down Dream Home. Go ahead and do that now. Write the words Dream Home. Now, if you already have your dream home, great. I still encourage you to do the exercise. Okay, we're going to put the word dream home. Now, to the right of that, we now need to identify ways to fuel our passion that could put me in vertigo. Let's talk about it. For example, when your belief is strong, things are going really well, they're going your way, you might be able to look at that model home and just see the pool that's at that model home. You can see that pool at your dream home, and it excites you. Maybe you want the bathroom to have that heated marble floor. You see that in the model home? You can picture that now in your home. A week later, something happens, or just something just doesn't go your way. Let's say you've allowed it to discourage you. It happens. With this negative state of mind that we're in now, do you think that you would be able to go back to that beautiful model home? And could it be possible that that home, that model home now, could now be a source of discouragement for you? Absolutely can put you into mental vertigo. Why? Because when you saw the house, this model home, remember that model home helps you or helped you picture your new dream home, but when you saw the model home when you were in the discouraged state, now you think, wow, I'm already so low now. For me to go from all the way down here to getting this dream home or even seeing the possibility of it existing is really just too much of a stretch. So that's our signal. We have now seen that we can't handle this situation and we're in mental vertigo. It's telling us that we're not able to believe like we used to a week ago. So the goal now is to try to get back to that model home again to see if we're able to, while experiencing a little bit of vertigo, can we still see the possibility of making that dream home happen? Now, for you, it may be going to a model home. Maybe it's a catalog or some type of a magazine that has beautiful homes in it. And that's what you use to motivate you. You'd go through there and see the type of kitchen that you want, and you feel excited and strong about it. Well, now you start getting some of that mental vertigo. Can you go ahead and look at that magazine again? Or does it make it very difficult for you to look at that magazine? The goal is to be able to, when you feel some of this mental vertigo, no matter how deep or how bad it gets, and of course this takes time to learn to master, but you want to get to the point that most of the times, if not all the time, that's really challenging to do, but most of the times, no matter how challenging it feels, you'll still be able to go to that model home, or you'll still be able to look at that brochure or that magazine, and as you look through that, you can still see that kitchen in that brochure or that magazine in your dream home. That's how you play games with your mind instead of your mind playing games with you. So why don't you take some time with this exercise? Find out some more of what your goals are, write them down, look for ways that you can use to fuel your passion. These are the same ways that it's going to cause you to get in mental vertigo when you're really down in the dumps, and you're going to use this exercise to strengthen that mind, similar to what I did with the airplanes at the airport. You'll find that some of the information that you put down on this exercise will be pretty similar to the exercise that you did on top of the page there of session 3, page 1. Let's go ahead and do this exercise now. Stop your CD. Well, now you've got an interesting exercise to work on. I know you'll do very well with it. Again, use it to get mentally tough. And we'll understand a lot more about this mental vertigo when you get to session 5. Well, let's go ahead and continue with our call.
Get to the point that if you make some type of action step toward a goal and you just get totally discouraged right away because you get an immediate no or whatever it is, immediately after that, friends, I cannot emphasize this enough, get on the phone. And if you do that enough, you will start getting used to it and you will actually just get conditioned where it's no big deal. So I actually got to the point where I got a big no, and I was really hoping that no would be a yes, boy. And if it was a yes, it was going to be something big and something great for me. But when I got that no, I would get discouraged. But as I'm getting discouraged and feeling the discouragement, I kid you not, I would get right back on the phone. and I would call again. And the next time somebody picks up the phone, they talk to me, I don't let them see that discouragement. I act as nothing has happened. I hang up the phone, I go get discouraged again. But see, I'll at least admit that it happens to me, because I know it happens to you, but the key is, what do you allow that discouragement to do? Do you allow it to wipe you out? Or will you allow it to fight back, to follow through and take action? That's the key. That's the challenge, and that's what we have to do. So learn to follow through and take action when you get excited about your passion, and learn to condition yourself to take action when you lose some of that excitement and some of that passion. The key is learn to be obsessed to follow through. Be obsessed about finishing unfinished business. And when you can do that, you're constantly moving forward. You're constantly taking action. Go to the next sentence or statement here. It's identify one of your goals. Here's what I'd like you to do for me. I want you to identify a big goal, something that seems to be maybe out of reach for you right now. I want you to write it down. Maybe it's a financial goal. Maybe it's a family goal or a spiritual goal. Whatever it is, put it down. Whether you believe you can do it or not, I'd rather it be something that you really, really, really have to stretch for. Go ahead and put that down for me now if you could. Assuming that you have that written down, let's go to the next sentence underneath that line where you've put this goal down. And that sentence reads, a blank means it's real to you. Put the word realist, R-E-A-L-I-S-T, a realist means it's real to you. Why am I bringing this to our attention? It was interesting, some of the feedback that we got last week is why I put this in here. And I thought it was quite interesting to get some of the reasoning of some of the people that were on the calls. I noticed when we started to talk about goals with some of the people, some big goals for some people, I mean, for them, they were very big. Maybe they thought about, you know, the possibility of making $1,000 a week or $2,000 a week or whatever the figures may be. And they look in their minds and they say to me, Gary, but you know what? I'm a realist. And I say to them, what do you mean by that? Well, I'm a realist. You know, I'm not from a background of making six figures. I'm doing good if I can make $30,000. Okay, and I buy that. But here's the problem. Under their definition of a realist, what they're saying is, no, man, I'm real, buddy. Yeah, you can't make that much money. You can't live your dreams. No, I'm a realist. This is the way it's going to have to be. But, you know, when you're a realist under this type of thinking, unfortunately, what you're doing is you're cheating yourself. You're telling yourself, I can only see this far. Beyond that is not realistic. I think the definition, if you think this way, your definition must change. Your definition of a realist must change. Now, if I'm looking at being a realist, in my definition of a realist is, if I say I'm going to make something happen and it's far-fetched and way out there, by George, I can make it happen, period. That's what a realist does. Now, it doesn't mean that you're going to think, you know, that it's wrong to think, well, you know, there may be some problems along the way. That's okay. That's being realistic. That just makes sense. It's like every time I'm in an airplane and I sit in the cockpit and I get ready to add the power for takeoff, I always say out loud, be prepared to abort or lose an engine. And just interestingly, just about a month ago, I was on the way to the Caribbean, and as I added power, I said, be prepared to abort and lose an engine. I added power, and less than 3 seconds later, something went wrong. I didn't like it. I wasn't happy. Boom, I aborted the takeoff. That's being realistic. It's not being negative. So the point here is, if you are caught up in this definition of being a realist, change your definition, because all you're doing is cheating yourself, and you're telling yourself under this definition that you can't stretch, you're unable to stretch, and you cannot go beyond what is normal. Normal to you is just this complacent attitude, and you can't go any further. So I thought that was really important to mention, because a lot of people have this type of thinking, and I think we really need to change that, because don't have this thinking of being this realist, because basically you're programming yourself to say, I can only go this far. Anything beyond that is unreal. Well, there's other people going beyond that, and they're making it happen. Why should it not be you as well? The only difference is they have a stronger belief than you do. So what do we need to do? What we need to do is, if we see other people doing it, there should be no reason why we can't do it. We can learn from them, we can find out what they're doing, and then we can also work toward the follow-through. Remember, if somebody else is doing it out there, there's no reason why we can't do it. Let's go to our next section, the valuation. Now recall, when we had our first session, we went through this extensive evaluation. Now, as we go through our entire program, we're going to take some of these evaluations and we're going to keep working on them as we continue. And the reason that we want to do that, we hopefully made a good argument when we first got started that goal setting is important. But what good is the goal setting if we have a lot of these psychological limitations, such as we don't believe in ourselves and things like that? And if these numbers are very low, we can set all the goals that we want, and we can also have all the passion. But if we don't master this evaluation, we're not going to be able to master the art of follow through. When I fail, let's fill that in, when I fail, and notice I have quotations there because that's basically a perception, when I fail or things maybe don't go our way, how quick do I recover and get back up? So what did you evaluate yourself on that one? Remember, 10 was the highest. If you get back up right away, you throw a 10 on it. If you were a 6 or below, it's something you need to work on. Now notice my next question underneath that evaluation question. The speed at which I recover will largely depend on the next evaluation question. Now let me repeat that, it's very important. The speed at which I recover will largely depend on the next evaluation question. So what's the next evaluation question? How much do I what? Believe in my ability to succeed. Good question. How much do I believe in my ability to succeed? When we get knocked down, maybe that passion isn't there today. We're having a hard time fueling that passion, and we feel that we've quote-unquote failed in our mind's eye. How do we get back up quickly? It's going to be dependent largely upon our belief to succeed. If we get knocked down, and for whatever reason, we cannot see beyond our hand, we can't see ahead, that's going to make it hard for us to get back up quickly. So the key is, if we can't get back up quickly, at least try to get back up. You ever seen those boxers? You know, they're boxing, they're about their 8th round or 10th round, however far they go, and one guy hits the other guy, knocks him down, and the referee's counting 1, 2, 3, and the guy, he's trying to get back up, but at least he's trying. He's wobbling. He looks like just a newborn baby calf or a baby colt that just wobbling all over the place, but he is at least trying to get back up. And if he can get his mental focus clear within the next 8 seconds, he will be able to stand back up and continue. What do you do? Do you wait for a full 8 seconds to get counted out? Now, of course, when I say 8 seconds, I'm not talking a literal 8 seconds. The key is, analyze that in yourself. If this evaluation is low, what that means is that you're going to have a harder time getting back up quickly. Now, why do we need to get back up quickly? Well, to get back up quickly means we probably are going to what? Fall down. Absolutely. Find me a successful person that hasn't fallen down. Find me a successful person that has not failed in their mind's eye to one way or another, or have had a perceived failure or things not go right. So we may as well learn to deal with it because it's going to happen, especially for those of you who are new into personal growth, new into setting goals, new into really trying to stretch and go forward. So let's understand that again. Let's go over this. Remember, if we fail, our ability to recover quickly is largely going to be dependent upon our ability to believe in how we can succeed. If you believe that you can succeed, and the more of that you can do, the quicker you'll be able to get back up.
It's me back in the studio. Starting here in this session, we'll begin focusing on the goal setting process. Through the rest of this program, when you hear me tell the listeners to get their sheet of paper that's entitled Setting the Goal, this is your cue to get yours. You'll want to start off by going to Session 11, page 2, where it reads, "The Setting the Goal segment from Session 3 begins here." So meet me there now. Got it? In this session, the Setting the Goal segment, we'll discuss the first step, identify the goal. In the next session after this, we'll go over Step 2. What step-by-step plan would I need to create so that I can accomplish this goal? The next session after that, we'll discuss step 3, and so on. Once you've completed your entire 12 sessions, you can go to the back of your workbook and you'll find extra Setting the Goal sheets that you'll be able to use to assist you in attaining your new goals. Now, these pages already have the answers filled in them for you, so no cheating.
Let's go to the next piece of paper that hopefully you've got with you, that you've printed, and it's entitled Setting the Goal. Setting the Goal. So we're going to take a goal that we want to identify. Perhaps it was the one that you just did earlier, and we're going to write this goal down. Identify the goal. Once we have this goal identified, and some people will tell you, and I've done it too, you know, make it clear, define it specifically, and you can, and I do encourage you to do that, but right now I just want you to get this goal down. Put a goal down. Let's go to the next question. This is an interesting question, I think. Will it take sub-goals or little goals? Will it take sub-goals to accomplish this, yes or no? A lot of goals that I think that you'll want to attain will probably be a yes, and there are going to be some that would be a no. For example, let's say you wanted a new car. You probably don't have too many sub-goals to buying a new car because all it is just a car. Let's say that you wanted to buy a stock car for racing. It's not uncommon that you might just buy the body by itself and no engine. So maybe you want to make a sub-goal and you just want to buy the body first because that's cheaper. That's working toward your goal. Then you're going to buy the frame, then you buy the engine. So you would break that down into sub-parts. So the ultimate goal is to have a finished stock car, but you're going to start off with buying the frame, the body, then the engine, and so forth. So this is how you'd put that in the sub-goal.
It's me back again here in the studio. I just wanted to interject something here. I said just a bit ago, in buying a new car, you may not have any sub-goals. Then you heard me just talk about buying a stock car, and the sub-goals toward that stock car would be purchasing individual pieces until you have everything to put your car together. Now, if your goal was to purchase a new car, it would be a little difficult to convince the dealer to sell you specific pieces of that car one step at a time or in sub-goals. But technically, you could still create sub-goals toward this new car. How so? You might make sub-goals of saving your money in maybe $500 or $1,000 increments. This would be a way of using sub-goals for your new car.
So if the answer is yes, that you have to have sub-goals to accomplish this ultimate goal, we need to break up all the sub-parts, take each little sub-goal, break them all up. We're going to talk about how to do that. We need to write them all down, and then we need to work on each sub-goal as a building block toward your ultimate goal. So in this particular example, the ultimate goal was this stock car. The building blocks toward getting the stock car would be the engine, the frame, and the body. So what about you? Do you have sub-goals toward setting your goals? Let's go to step two here. So what we need to do now is find out what step-by-step plan would I need to create so that I can accomplish this goal. What step-by-step plan would I need to create so I can accomplish this goal? You need to do this. This is something that's a must. If you were to come in my office right now, for example, one of my goals is to complete this entire 12-week program, and then we're eventually going to put it together in a program that's packageable. That's a lot of work. In my office, I have an 8x4 large, clear piece of plexiglass. And on this plexiglass, I have two of them. So I have 16 feet of this in my office. On the left side, the one that's 8 foot by 4 foot, I have every session of my 12 weeks, that's where they're going. My ultimate goal is what? To complete a final finished piece. What are my sub-goals? My sub-goals are each session. I have it on here, session 1, session 2, all the way to 12 sessions. Now, under session 1, I have the little sub-parts, and I have it right in front of me. I put a little square right before what needs to be done, and then I'm looking at it right now. I'll read it off. It's got to be edited and cleaned up. So after this is done, we have to edit it and clean it up. Then we have to write an additional script. That's right underneath edit. Then after that, we have to create a workbook page. Then after that, we have to do studio recording. Then after that, we have to mix, track, and do the music. Then we have to burn it into a master. And then we have to continue to re-record an intro. And that's just one session. And I have this all written down. And as we finish one thing, I go up to the board and I check it off. I check it off in that little box. And you'll find with all the programs that I talk about when it comes to increasing our performance or setting a goal, I strongly suggest any time that you have to put down a step-by-step plan or system to accomplish something, before you put the step or the plan down, I strongly suggest you put a little square or a little box right before it. Because when you're done, you're going to check that off, and that is your cue to know that you have completed this particular subpart or this particular plan. And I think, too, there's a lot that's related to getting a check mark. You know how when we were little kids at school, we get a nice check mark right on our page, you know, when we're in first or second grade, and we get a good feeling. It's like a fuzzy feeling because we got a check mark. And I think also when we set these little subpart goals, we don't get so overwhelmed. When you have this checked off, you just get a good feeling that you're accomplishing something, even though it's a little subpart toward the big goal. This goal that I have here that I've just shared with you about this program, it's going to take me many, many, many months before it's completed. But tomorrow, I might be able to check one of these little boxes off, one of probably 115 boxes I have. But I'm just going to feel good. And when you feel that you've accomplished something, even though it's a little thing, I think that does a lot also for our self-esteem. You know, you're accomplishing things every day, whether we realize it or not. Some of it's effective, some of it's not. But at least the effective things that you're following through on, wouldn't it be nice to consciously make a check mark about it? And when you make that check mark, it's just a good feeling. Just like when you know you need to clean something up, but you're just not doing it. Even though you know it should be done, and you wait and you wait and you wait and you procrastinate and you finally get it done. And once you finally get it done, you feel so good that you did it. But you know, if you had written that down and put a little check mark there and put a little time frame when you're going to get it done, and you followed through on it and you checked it off, it just makes you feel better. Take advantage of that. That's something that's very, very important. When you set your sub-goals, it's really important to try to clearly define them and know what specifically that you have to do to make things happen. So figure out what your total ultimate goal is, and then write down, you've got to take some time for me to get to this level. Let's say in your business, you want to get to level X, whatever level X is. You know to get to level X, if you've just begun, you're going to have to start at level 1 and work your way up. So your ultimate goal to get to level X, it may take you 1, 2, 3 years. So what you're going to do now is you're going to take that ultimate goal and you're going to chop it up in little pieces. The first step I'm going to have to do is this. And it may be a step that can only take you maybe a couple days or a week to do. And if you don't break this down into sub-goals, into sub-pieces, the problem with this is you get too overwhelmed. I know I have set goals before, and I got so overwhelmed because I didn't know where to start. I didn't break things down. And when you don't know where to start, you get discouraged. And that reminds me of one thing. One thing you don't want to do is you never want to create a negative association to setting goals. And here's what that means. I've seen a lot of people, and I've been guilty of it myself. When I first started getting into personal growth, I got the impression from some of these motivational rah-rah guys, you just set a goal and you work toward it and, you know, it's supposed to happen. And maybe I was a little naive, but I really kind of felt that way. And what happened was, is 6 months later, I expect all these goals to happen, and none of them happened. I mean, none of them. And I'm looking back and thinking, wait a minute, what am I doing wrong? Well, what I was doing wrong to begin with is I was unrealistic. I mean, my expectations were really, really too high. And then I set myself up for a fall. So once I set myself up for a fall, I started thinking, wait a minute, why set these goals? Because every time I set one of these goals, you know what happens? It doesn't come true. So why set the next one? If the last one hasn't come through, why bother with this one? And I actually started creating a negative association to setting goals. Friends, we can't do that. A man or woman without a goal is like a ship without a rudder. You've got to have goals. Little goals, small goals, big goals, and we're going to keep working toward these goals all the way through the session. But the key is it's so important. I remember years ago, and I was at a radio station doing an interview. It's probably, oh my goodness, I would say maybe 8 years ago. And this guy had a little radio station. He probably literally maybe 1,000 watts, a little AM thing. The guy was overweight. He had to weigh a good 280 pounds or better. And he sat me down in this little makeshift, you know, little whatever it is, little tiny office that he had. And he sat down and had this little interview with me, and I would imagine maybe 100 people were listening to this. And he said to me, you know, Gary, I'm doing all this, and I never set goals. I mean, why should I set goals? Look where I'm at now. Well, that was his reasoning, and it made no sense. what I should have said to him is, imagine where you would really be at if you did set goals. So the point is setting goals keeps you focused. I kind of relate it to having a metal detector. If you have a metal detector and you have it with you, you can find metal. Now, you could be at the beach and you could be walking over gold treasure all day long and not know it. But if you have a metal detector, you're kind of honing in looking for it. Now, on top of that, you have to make sure your metal detector works. You have to make sure the batteries are good, and you have to make sure you're turning it on. What goals do for you, it gives you direction like that rudder on the ship, and it helps you hone in and keeps you clearly focused as to what's going on toward your goals. When you start thinking this way, if you're not used to it, you're going to see how it works. But you want to make sure you don't get too discouraged, because the worst thing you can do is create a negative association of goal setting. We don't want to do that. And again, why do we not want to do that? Because we're going to stop ourselves mentally from setting the next goal and the next goal. And those next goals could be those real, real big goals. So let's do a quick review. What we want to do is make sure we fuel our passions. Take the time to identify what your passions are. We did a lot of that last week. And this week what I want to do is I want to make sure we take time to learn how to fuel those passions. Get those passions lit. Get them excited. Once you've got the excitement, what do? We don't sit on the runway and let the fuel burn. We got to do something with it. So take that excitement and make yourself take some type of action. Make yourself follow through so you can associate the excitement from the passion to an action step. Now, as you keep doing that, some of you have to force yourself to do that because you're not used to doing this. As you keep doing this, what's going to happen is you're going to start getting results from your follow through. When you start getting results from your follow-through, then it's going to be second nature to you. It's going to be second nature to you just like breathing and blinking your eyes are. That's your goal. You want to be able to follow through on your goals just like you breathe and you don't have to think about it. And when you're at that point, you know you've got it down. When you're at that point, you really do know the sky's the limit because you're not programmed with all the negative junk, all the negative stuff that we talked about in lesson one. You're learning to master all that, and when you have that all mastered, when most of them are at about a 10, the only thing that's stopping you now is just you, because you can set a goal, you don't have the psychological junk in your head slowing you down, and you just keep going forward and forward and forward and forward. Then we also want to make sure that we associate also when we're discouraged. What do? We immediately want to get ourselves to take action right away. We don't want to be a realist. You remember the person that says, oh, it's only real for me to make this much or go this far. I could never go beyond that. Make sure we don't get caught up in that thinking. And always keep in mind, the speed at which you recover will largely depend on how much belief you have in your ability to succeed. Let's quickly talk about the goal setting. Remember, we're going to start setting our goals this week. We want to identify some of our goals. We want to identify if the goals that we're working on have subparts or sub-goals to them, and if they do, we need to put them down. Next week, we're going to take this goal-setting process a step further, and we're going to continue the entire process and also continue on with more of the evaluation as we conclude the 12 weeks.
Well, that concludes that call. What you're now going to get to listen to is an individual who happened to be on the call that you just listened to, and he won the opportunity to have me work with them personally. So let's go ahead and listen in on that particular call.
And Don, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right. Don, you want to give me a little idea of what you've got focused on here?
Okay, I'll read it to you as best I can here. My question or dilemma is, all my life I'm not a person who gets excited or passionate about anything. I mean, really, it's at least I certainly don't get the way everyone else seems to get when they have a passion or an excitement for something.
Okay.
I do, however, decide that this or that is what I choose to do, pursue, change, or whatever, then I just go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
Example, I really do enjoy white-tailed deer hunting. But there's no need for me to fuel this activity when the hunting season approaches. I just get ready and I go.
Right.
So my dilemma is trying to identify fuels for my passions when I don't feel as though I have any passions or excitement for anything in particular.
Mm.
I just choose to or not to. And for an instance, I do not need to get pumped up about my health products because I know they work.
Mm-hmm.
Results are apparent in anyone who uses them. Now, do I make any sense?
Okay, you make a lot of sense. But here's what we have to do now. You've already said that you have passion connected to your goals?
I think if that's what you want to call it, I mean, I don't get all excited and hop around or anything.
That's fine. You probably don't hop around when you go to deer hunt too, right?
No, and I've been accused of all my life of not enjoying things because I don't. Are you enjoying this? Why, sure.
Okay.
You look like you are. Did you like that? Well, sure. Well, you didn't act like you liked it. And that's kind of my person. That's the type of person I am. And in trying to invite and trying to identify something that I get all excited over so that I can find a fuel to fuel it, well, then I got stuck.
Okay. We don't necessarily have to say that passion means excitement, but I certainly don't think it hurts. What we're talking about is any form of passion that helps you or you can use to take action with. If in your mind's eye it's passion and it can get you up or you can utilize it to get you up, then do so. What I would recommend you do is if you feel that urge or that passion, you need to make sure, like we spoke earlier, you need to channel that passion into some type of action step. Do you think you're doing that enough now?
As much as I feel I'm able to, I feel as though I am.
Okay. Define able to.
The limitations on my home life, my budget. You can lump them all in.
Okay, I'm with you on that.
Okay, there.
What I'm trying to do, I'm trying to find out from you, Don, if you're being real about this or you're trying to make excuses, or I'm just trying to find out more what's going on in your head. If there's somebody has a financial stake or an investment in you, yeah, they're going to want you to set the world on fire. But your goals aren't necessarily their goals.
Exactly.
So you guys, I think a lot of people need to remember this. Your goals aren't necessarily everybody else's goals. And you've got to determine what's going to make you happy, your family happy, et cetera, et cetera. Number one, determine, is this what I want? Is this good for my family? Is this good for me? Then if that's the case, you know, there's some people that when they get to a certain level, they just can't stop. They keep going. There's other people when they get to a level, they just want to chill and do nothing else. And I don't think we should fault them for that because that's their choice. If their goal is to do more than that and they choose not to, then, hey, let's work on that. So that's something I wanted to put in there. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. And I don't know that I fall exactly into that.
I don't think you do.
I certainly want to do more than what I'm doing. I just haven't figured out a way to shed so many hats that I'm wearing.
Okay. So, well, what you need to do is I would write down all the hats that you're wearing. Put them all on paper. And then keep in mind a lot of times we have like two distractions we can control, distractions that we can't control. Figure out which of those distractions you can control,
right,
and which of those distractions you can't. And obviously the ones that you can control, work toward doing that. It may be controllable in a day or two. It may take months or two. Some of them years. But hey, if you're chipping at it, it's going to happen.
Okay.
So I would definitely focus on those distractions because when you get so easily sidetracked, it's so hard to maintain that course because the sidetracking takes you off mentally, it takes you off emotionally, and then you have to rejuvenate yourself all over again to figure out where was I and get back on track again, and that is not an easy thing to do.
Yeah. I know. The bottom line is I'm spread too thin with too many people.
Absolutely.
They happen to be family, which makes it hard for me to say no.
And sometimes you have to. Because when it's all said and done, you're the one that's going to be beat down and nothing left of you.
Right. So then, just because I don't feel like all kinds of emotions well up inside of me doesn't mean I'm not passionate about something.
It doesn't necessarily mean you're not that passionate. I mean, people express passion in different ways. But one thing I would suggest to you is I think people are happier when they get excited about little things. And I enjoy life more when I'm excited about the little things. Just a little, you know, a cute little bird, a sunset, even though that's not little, but just the little things. Because what happens too, Don, you know, it may show that you're so wrapped up in all these distractions that you need to get a life. You know, maybe you're not enjoying it enough.
Oh, I suppose that's possible, too, because I was raised to do what you're supposed to do first. And then if you have any time left, then you get to do what you want to do.
Well, you're going to find out in this program, we're totally opposite of that. Yeah, you can't afford to do that because no wonder you get, blah all the time. You've got to learn to, reward yourself. And we're going to get into one of the lessons that we're going to talk about, how to reward ourselves, when to do it, even if we can't afford it. So hopefully we've given you some food for thought.
Okay. Yes, I think you have.
Any other points or thoughts you have, Don?
I think that just about covers it.
Okay. Well, try to apply the information, and again, stick with the program over the next 12 weeks, and I think you'll also continue to get more of this. And I think what's going to happen with all of you, as you keep listening to more, all the dominoes will slowly be putting them into place. And what I think I enjoy so much about this program is it's just not on, setting a goal. It's mastering the art of follow-through. And when you master the art of follow-through, the coolest thing about this is once you put a goal down and you've committed to that goal, because you are a master at following through, we don't have these psychological limitations. We get them all figured out. So lesson one helps us master all this to get them all figured out. That's why as we go through all of this information, keep going back to that first lesson and make sure that we're tightening up that evaluation, because I can promise you this, if you can get your evaluations all up to a 10, imagine what you're capable of accomplishing. It's not necessarily the goal. It's the inside. So if we get all these numbers up to a 10, man, we're just a mover and a shaker. We just make things happen. So as we're working toward our goals and things don't happen the way we'd like to, we get caught up in some of these emotions, jump back to, lesson one or first week and see what are we getting caught up in, and then work on tweaking that, polishing it, mastering it, and then keep working toward our goals, and you'll see it clear up, man. It's pretty cool. All righty, friends, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So I am going to wrap up another long, long day. And hopefully we'll hear from you guys, and we'll chime in next Tuesday, same channel.
Yep. Bye, Gary.
All righty.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for your time. Glad I could spend some time with you, and thanks again for all your input.
You're welcome, sir.
Thank you.
Take care now. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.